Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our drama today by Morton Wishengrad is entitled To the Disinherited. The narrator is Raymond Edward Johnson. A citizen of the United States was on board this plane in October 1945. His name was Judge Simon H. Rifkin of the United States District Court of New York. He flew as civilian advisor on Jewish affairs in Europe to the American commanding general under appointment of the President of the United States to investigate the condition of displaced persons in the occupied areas of Germany and Austria. What follows now is based upon the things Judge Rifkin saw and reported.
I spent 5 months in the American zone of occupation. I spent 5 months among those who were beaten small as the dust before the wind, who were bowed down and fallen, who are now miraculously risen and stand upright and wait. They cannot wait much longer, for the foundation of their earth is laid bare. Their fruit is destroyed. Their seed is nearly vanished from among the children of men. I do not speak now of the static corrosion of poverty. I speak of the cold thrust of annihilation, of the Jew of Europe who has made a drink offering of his blood. You may not understand the mind of the living unless you understand first the process of death. I visited the graves of 6 million dead. I viewed the instruments of torture. I forced myself to look upon the fertilizer manufactured by thrifty Germans from the bones of their victims. And I stood beside a man whose mouth was twisted in the hurt that is beyond pain. A man spoke to me out of the nakedness of his soul.
You don't believe this, do you?
No, I don't believe it.
In your heart, you're saying that none of it is real.
Yes.
That this is only a stage set for a horrible play that never happened, that never will happen.
Yes, I want to believe that.
All right, believe it. It's easier that way. Human beings never did this to other human beings. It's all a monstrous lie. Let's go outside. I can't endure the smell.
Outside, the air was clean. Flowers were planted along the gravel walk. It was easy to believe that what I had seen was only a wild nightmare fantasy. Only the smell lingered. The smell of human decay that mingled with the odors of flowers. Then we met a man. He was also a fantasy.
Zeitlin, come here.
Yes?
This is the American who's come to help us.
What does he want?
He wants to talk to you, Zeitlin.
Does he have passports for us?
No.
Then he wants to make conversation. I don't care for conversation.
I want to help you, Zeitlin. Tell me what you need.
I need a substitute for the missing Earth. Do you have a substitute?
No, I don't have a substitute.
Then what's the good? People without a home are abnormal people. You'll talk to us, and you'll become abnormal, too. Better leave us alone.
Zeitlin, what's in your mind?
A prayer. I'm a fool. I keep saying a prayer over and over again. I keep saying, Lord, thou hast heard the desire of the humble. That man who is of the earth may be terrible no more. I keep saying it over and over again. I told you, I'm a fool.
This is the content of a mind that has no recent memory except of terror. This is the utterance of one man who has been submerged in bestiality, who has seen his brother and his friend deprived of even the last pitiful dignity that is owing to the dead. And the content of his mind is...
That man who is of the earth may be terrible no more.
Accommodate yourself to the utterance. For this is the real tragedy of those who have been submerged, emerged from the pit and found no place for the flesh to dwell in safety. The tragedy is not in the mass. There is no mass. The mass is a deceit. I shall tell you what there is. 100,000 separate and distinct lives, each separately exalted by the miracle of survival.
It is the miracle. It is the miracle of me. I am a Jew in Europe, and I am alive.
Where is your family?
Never ask that question.
I need to know.
There are no families. There are only individual survivors. There are no homes. There are only houses. Our houses, which the Germans live in.
It's my job to help you get those houses back.
No. No, we don't want to live in them now. Not here in Germany. Perhaps elsewhere, but not in Germany. We are sojourners in Europe now. 100,000 people who wait for promises to be fulfilled. We are not dead and we are not living. We are displaced.
I spoke to German citizens. The virus of hate has been well sown and the infection is embedded at the root. They, too, are displaced. Displaced in civilization. And this corruption of the human spirit will be slow in healing. I spoke to them. They will admit that they have been stupid. Only a few will admit that they have been wicked. This is a demonstrable fact. And it is also a demonstrable fact that the sojourners of Germany and Austria are impatient of investigations and time-consuming, life-devouring commissions of inquiry.
Can't they understand us? We have come out of catastrophe into the humiliation of waiting. We are disillusioned now and frustrated. If we wait much longer, we will yield to despair. Before we yield to despair, we will explode. 100,000 people will explode.
Where do you want to go?
Out of Europe.
Suppose you could go. How long would it take you to be ready?
Do you mean that question?
Yes.
All right. I'll answer it. My family lived in Austria for nearly 1,500 years. Until 5 years ago, I thought this was my country. I know better now. I'm ready to leave that 1,500 years in exactly 15 minutes.
I have spoken to these men and women. I shall not forget their faces. A man may commune with his heart upon his bed, but after he has seen these faces, he may never be still. He will tread his life down to the earth and lay his glory in the dust. For these are men begotten in the image of the Lord of loving kindness. And now their inward part is a yawning gulf, and their throat is an open sepulcher. They are cast down in the multitude of the transgressions of the world. And for them now the pledges and the promises that have been given are made with a smooth tongue, and no remembrance of the testimony of 6 million dead. This, too, is the real tragedy. They have lost faith in words. And it is not strange that a few of them have become demented by that loss of faith. This is what I saw in the camp at Landsberg.
Tell us your name.
I have no name.
What are you?
I am man. A little lower than the angels and crowned with glory and honor.
Don't worry about him, sir. The American doctors are giving him good care. His case isn't hopeless. Once he gets out of here, he'll become a normal man again.
May I ask him a question?
Of course.
Is there something you need? Something you want?
Nothing. No, there is something. I don't want to wear this suit. It is the prison uniform of the concentration camp. Tell them to give me another suit.
I will. I'll take it up with the commanding officer right away.
That's good. I don't want to wear this suit. It's the prison suit of the concentration camp.
He has a legitimate grievance.
Is he? He doesn't have to wear that prison suit. Have you seen anyone else wearing one? Do I?
No, that's right. You don't. Then he doesn't have to either?
No. But he wears the suit. Memories are the only thing he has left. The suit is a link to memories. He wants attention. And that's how he receives attention, by wearing a prison suit. There are only a few like him. They want two things, attention and security. Since the American army came, the accommodations are very much better. But there were some who insist on living in one small room, like chickens on a roost. It gives them security to be together. The miracle is that there are only a few like that.
In the 5 months that I was among the displaced persons of Germany and Austria, I saw many miracles. The miracle of people still sane, still godly, still exalted by dignity and personal grace. I went to Germany intending to help the few survivors. But I acknowledge now that they helped me. I acknowledge myself everlastingly in debt to them. They taught me the meaning of courage, of integrity, of charity. These are not just pretty words. There was the young man, pale-faced, dreamy-eyed, who nonchalantly said to me,
"Thank you for everything. I want to say goodbye now."
Where are you going?
I'm going to Vilna. I found out this morning that my brother's child is still alive somewhere in Vilna. I'm going to find him and bring him here.
He had no money, no car, no gasoline, no passport, no travel documents. But he was setting out to cross and to recross 3 national frontiers, guarded by armed troops, to risk his life in order to rescue his brother's child. They taught me. When I saw them sharing their very meager rations with new arrivals, when I saw them dividing their tattered garments with those who had less, making room in their beds for those not yet accommodated, I knew then that this was not a body of derelict beneficiaries of charity. When people who have endured what they have endured organize schools before they build dining halls, when they pray for books before they ask for clothes, when they plead for a homeland and speak not at all of vengeance, Such people are not the beneficiaries of charity. They are a brigade of free men united by a common memory, exalted by the aspiration to live again as a people. They know what they want. They told me. They told an American general who was sitting by my side. It was a young boy who told the general. He could not have been more than 15, but he knew what he wanted.
Thank you for the new shoes, General.
It's all right, son. How did your feet ever get in that condition?
From walking.
How far did you walk?
All the way from the Polish frontier.
Why did you cross the border illegally?
I wanted to enter the American zone.
Why?
You know why.
Would you like to question the lad, sir?
If I may, General. Do you want to stay in Germany?
No.
Where do you want to go?
It's written here on two pieces of paper. Here.
There's nothing here. These are only letters.
Yes, sir. One is a letter from a cousin in Chicago. It says, "My dear cousin, can I help you? Do you need food? Do you want money? Tell us how much and we will send it to you."
And the other letter?
It is from my sister in Tel Aviv. She doesn't ask if I need money. She says, "I am ready to receive you. All of Israel and Palestine is ready to receive you. Each night I cry and I pray to God you can come to us soon. We want you. This is your home."
Do you have any questions, General?
No. No questions.
They know what they want. They want to quit Europe. They want to live together, no longer dispersed among a population trained to persecute them and to tolerate them. They desire to live in the pattern of their own historic culture. In Germany and Austria and in Poland, that cultural civilization is dead. It was not only 6 million Jews who were slaughtered, it was Jewish scholarship. It was great academies of learning which once produced men of wisdom. It was Jewish music. The poetry and painting that enriched a civilization which has made payment with bone ground into fertilizer. They want to quit Europe. They want to go where they are wanted. And today, America is virtually the last hope for the realization of that intense, passionate yearning.
For 25 years, the governments of Great Britain have reaffirmed their pledges.
But for 25 years, we have been told that time is not ripe.
But we are ripe. We are so ripe with disappointment. We are so ripe with waiting and waiting and waiting that we want to cry out to God. Oh, Lord, how long? Save us for thy mercy's sake, for in death there is no remembrance of thee.
Understand this, please. We haven't given up. Every American president has encouraged us. We pray to God that these aren't just more words.
You do not know what prayer means until you have heard them pray. They stand in their displaced synagogues. Yes, the displaced synagogues of the displaced persons. And they proclaim the words of Isaiah.
"And it shall come to pass in that day that the remnant of Israel and they that are escaped of the house of Jacob shall no more stay upon him that smote them, but shall stay upon the Lord. The Lord hath founded Zion, and in her shall the afflicted of his people take refuge."
And when I hear them, and I still hear them, for the words are now sealed in my flesh, I want to say to the commissions and the statesmen and the unrepentant despoilers of their lives, I want to say, yea, thou shouldst not have gazed on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance. Neither shouldst thou have stood in the crossways to cut off those of his that escape. It is very difficult to be judicial and properly objective. They are men of passion, and they have learned to distrust the kind of objectivity which kindles no lamps, which lightens no darkness, which proffers only the doubtful consolation of future promise instead of present deed. They ask a question of the world. Is theirs only the extravagance of blind faith founded upon a lie? Someone must answer. And the answer is strange, for it comes from them, from the dispossessed. I saw this in Camp Deggendorf near the eastern frontier. You may consider it an answer.
Come this way, sir. Be careful of the timbers.
What are they doing, Captain?
I will let them tell you. David, put down your saw for a moment.
What is it, Captain?
There's a gentleman here who wants to know what you're doing.
We're building a store. After it's built, it will be stocked with food and clothing. We'll sell it.
Who is going to buy what you sell?
We buy it. We printed our currency. Not pfennigs, not marks. Our own currency in dollars and cents.
Where are you getting the clothing to sell?
The captain supplies it. He supplies it free.
I'm a little confused. If it's free, why do you sell it?
We don't want charity. Every man who does work is paid in camp currency. Only the things you work for are free.
Do you understand now, sir?
I'm beginning to. David, why are you doing this?
We're training ourselves for Palestine.
They are training themselves for Palestine through work. In Camp Deggendorf, there are 300 aged men among the displaced. Each young man who works and is paid deducts a percentage of his earnings for the aged. Social security for the dispossessed by the dispossessed. They are training themselves. They are training themselves to see again and to work again and to be normal men and women again. They are providing an answer. In Camp Landsberg, I met Jacob Kleiske. He is also an answer.
Jacob, where did you find that lathe?
I didn't find it, Colonel. I made it.
From what?
Scrap. A few parts from this, a few parts from that.
Now that you have the lathe, what are you going to do with it?
I'm going to teach the men how to operate it. We'll build other lathes the same way. We're going to start an auto repair shop, a clothing factory, a radio plant. What we don't have in the way of tools, we'll find. What we don't find, we'll borrow. What we can't borrow, we'll make ourselves.
What's all this for, Jacob?
We're training ourselves for Palestine.
The words are not spoken idly. This man, Jacob Kleiske, has organized a shoe factory, a factory for the manufacture of dentures, a newspaper plant. A full font of type in Hebrew characters was missing. He made the missing letters himself. There were some who could not read the newspaper when it was published. He organized them into classes and appointed teachers. Jacob Kleiske is training the survivors of Landsberg into men of skill and capacity. It is not a small thing. It is an answer. I was present when Jacob Kleiske and a delegation of displaced persons presented a gift to General McNaney.
You may not know what this is, General. It is a menorah. It is the light that is kindled in the synagogue before the tabernacle. We wanted to find some way to show the American army what we think of it. We were degraded when they came. Now we are not degraded. You are helping us to become free men with the privilege of looking after ourselves. Because of you, the barbed wire has come down. Because of you, we can stand in the synagogue and say, "In thee, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be ashamed." Please accept this menorah, General. We have made it ourselves out of scraps of cartridges and shell casing. Maybe that's significant. I hope so. Take it, General. Whatever is good and hopeful in us is in that.
Captain. General McNaney of the United States Army accepted a shell casing transformed by the labor of hope into a menorah. This is the symbol of 100,000 men and women in the displaced persons camps of Germany and Austria. They are people who are waiting. They are determined to reach Palestine or to die. They are sustained by only one hope, that tomorrow the day of migration to Palestine will be announced. In 15 minutes they will be ready. In 10 minutes they will be ready. They are ready now, at this moment, at this precise second. Defer that hope of migration and the result is catastrophe and moral execution. They must be saved. They have made that decision and they earned the right to make that decision by the drink offering of their blood. They are men and women exalted by the miracle of survival. And I am exalted because I have seen them.
Our script was based upon a report written by Judge Simon H. Rifkin, former civilian advisor on Jewish affairs to the commanding general of the United States forces in the European theater. If you would like a free copy of the script, write to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Eternal Light is written by Morton Wishengrad. The music is composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Catons. The narrator was Raymond Edward Johnson. Liturgical music was sung by cantor David Futterman. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.